my parents always encouraged me. They said, be the change that you want to see. Like, if you've got an opinion, if you've got a thought, if you've got something you want to do, do it. Because, you know, especially when it comes to policy and whatnot, if you don't say something, you know, 10, 15, 20 years down the line, when that policy becomes law, when it's legislated, you know, you've lost your opportunity, you've lost your window. So I've kind of always had that mindset.
The Growing the Future podcast is brought to you by Eberhardt Ag Solutions. Join us as we talk to top entrepreneurs in the agricultural space about their methods of obtaining success in their endeavors. And now, your host, Dan Eberhardt.
I am super stoked to have a very young, exciting, upcoming individual in the agricultural space with me today on the show. A young farmer by the name of Jake Eyre. How are you doing there today, Jake?
Good, Dan the man. What's happening with you?
Oh, I'm just keeping it real in the agricultural hood. Been working on lots of crazy stuff and exciting times, and I'm super stoked for our conversation today. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, me as well. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be good. So we're going to get into you and your background and your story, but I've laid it out for really easy listening and also for us to keep track of where we're going. With three easy sections today, Jake. I've given them all titles. It might give you a bit of a hint where we're going to take it. So the first place we're going to go is entitled The Prodigal Son. The Prodigal Son. Boom. Okay. You get where I'm going with that? And then the second part is going to be How the Carbon Tax Launched My Career into Politics by Jake Eyre.
Ooh.
Boom. And the third section, see where we're going with this? It's going to be called The Hunger Games, and the actual, you know, movie title behind The Hunger Games is going to be Trumping Trudeau. It's going to be about some politics and farming and stuff like that. So, Jake, you're a young man, but you got a long storied history in agriculture with your family. You farm with your dad and your mom and your sister out at Minto there. But you have a history going all the way back to the 1400s. Tell us about who you are and the history of the farm a little bit.
Yeah. So like you said, we've been farming. The Eyres, of course, have been farming for generations. We did our family tree 10 years ago. And from as far back as like, we kind of lost track. 1400s, it got kind of muddy. You know, I guess they didn't keep as good of records back then or something. But as far back that, we could trace the Eyres as being farmers in the southwest of England, the county Devonshire. Dan, I don't know if you've been to Devonshire.
Have not. Read about it in storybooks, though.
It's supposedly one of the most beautiful counties. It's right on the southwest. It's very well known for its agriculture and for a travel destination because it's right on the coast. It has the best surfing beaches in the United Kingdom. So I literally... we moved from a farm. We were a livestock, sheep, and grain operation in England. And I moved from a farm where you literally went up the top of the lane, and then you went down a hill, up another hill, and boom, there's the ocean. And
you came,
my
you came
mom
to Canada
reminds
in 2002, you said? Like, how old
2002,
were you?
Yeah. Yeah. So I was six when I came.
Okay, so you have some memories.
So I do remember, and we go back often because all of my family's there. I have a sister who just had a daughter. So I have a niece. We unfortunately haven't been able to go and see them because of COVID. That was the plan. We were going to go fly over there. But yeah, so all my family is actually in the United Kingdom. I have a cousin who's there in the military. They're stationed in Canada right now. But other than that, yeah, I grew up with all my family in England. We go back there.
So why is it that you guys emigrated? What was the impetus there?
See, I always ask mom and dad, and the answer I typically get is opportunity. Because, I mean, I was six. I had no say in the matter. I was, I mean, they tell the story of apparently the day we were going, I had my suitcase and I had a little temper tantrum, said, I'm not going. And I, you know, stormed back off into the house and was, you know, adamant that I'm staying here. But
typical, you know, Englishman.
That's probably more the redhead gene, Dan, than anything. The
ginger. The temper. Well, we'll get into that. Yeah. We'll get into the ginger gene.
Yeah, so like they say opportunity and BSE hit in England. I think that was, 2001? Real bad disaster in the cattle industry in the United Kingdom. Our farm wasn't directly affected, but lots of the surrounding farms were. It took a lot of toll mentally on the whole industry and really depressed cattle prices. So it was tough sledding. So I think that was kind of a factor. And Dad also talks about he came to Canada when he was 17, went to Southern Ontario, of all places. He had a great uncle out there, and he just loved it. He wanted to live that, I guess, almost like the pioneer dream, you know, get a piece of land and wide open space, try and make a go of it.
I think that's what makes everybody here so great. I mean, we're all from that background one way or another, but it's amazing that you go so far back in history. But for yourself, you were telling me that farming wasn't always the absolute clear path, but you found out through your various endeavors that it's a great life.
So I went to Boys and Men, graduated from there, and the plan was to go to university because mom's like adamant thing was you need an education no matter what you want to do. She said, I don't care if it's, you know, underwater basket weaving. She didn't say those exact words, but she was kind of, that was her thing. This is a mom thing. She's like, well, you know, in case something changes.
Right.
So she said, go to college or university, get like trade. She wasn't hung up on, you know, university or college. It was just do something post-secondary. So I went to University of Manitoba. Not really a hot clue what I wanted to do. Kind of business, marketing, agriculture was kind of in the mix, but I was like, oh, I don't know. I want to kind of see what's around and figure it out. And so funny enough, I went to university and geez, man, I kept hanging out with all these rural kids and all these farm kids. Just, I kind of seemed to gravitate to, it was almost like growing up on a farm, you had something in common. I don't know. It was kind of strange. It was like, you know, you can meet a farmer from Swan River and you're like, oh, like you guys drive tractors too?
You didn't relate to the inner city kids quite the same?
Honestly, at first I found it tough. Like, because it is, I mean, it's different environment, right? Like, you know, you say the environment you grow up in, it's not your fault. That's what you know, right? So it was tough at first to relate to, you know, people who grew up in Winnipeg because it's a different, it's still prairie, but it's a different mindset, you know? So I went there, ended up hanging out with the farm kids and these great Aggies. And I kind of thought, huh, like, these are some pretty cool cats. And I remember sitting there one night and someone had a test. Like they'd got marked and got back and sitting there. And I kind of looked at it. I went, what's that? And then, oh, that was my test from last week here. I just looked at it. I'm like flipping through. I'm like, oh, I know that one. Oh yeah, I know that. Oh, this is kind of interesting. And then they're looking at me like, did you just call a test interesting? So from that point, I was kind of like, huh, maybe I should probably be studying this if I'm interested in it and perhaps have a bit of background knowledge. So that was kind of when the light bulb went on. As my mom likes to say, I like to do everything the hard way. You know, I have to figure it out for myself. So that was me figuring out for myself when I'm pretty sure my mom told me, she's like, yeah, you'll probably end up in agriculture. And I'm like, yeah. So yeah, anyway, so that's how I studied it. Graduated diploma class of 2017. Nice. Co-valedictorian. So it was actually two gingers were the valedictorians.
Wow.
Gingers
are not on the decline. They are on the rise in some sectors.
I think we had six gingers in the class of 78. So like they say it's a 1% thing, but I don't know. Those skew the stats.
I thought they were going extinct, but I mean, I got like 3.5 of them.
Apparently not. We're still thriving. So anyway, so I graduated there and kind of worked around for a bit, and I woke up one day and realized that I always helped out on the farm in the summers and stuff. But I woke up one day and I realized like I miss being, you know, on the farm. I miss working with the land, the diverse job we do. I miss the people. So, so I came back and now I farm and work on our family business, rent some land of my own, and just kind of doing my thing here.
Absolutely. No, that's really cool. So tell us a little bit about your farm and working with your dad and the businesses that you have and how you guys work together.
Yeah, so we are a seed growers. So predominantly the crops that we grow, so like wheat, barley, oats, soybeans, they're pedigreed, so they're for seed production. We also grow stuff like corn, canola, and like the conventional soybeans for cash crops. We have a seed plant on site with a color sorter. So typically the crops that we grow, we're a registered seed establishment. We process them on site. And then we sell them to farmers in the surrounding area. So we sell them out of our yard. We also sell pedigreed seed for like Pioneer. We sell fertilizer, inoculants, biologicals, all that fun snake oil stuff.
The hizzle jizzle juice. I love it.
And we do a bit of, we do some custom work too. Like, we do custom planting, custom seeding, custom spraying, that kind of thing. So yeah, it's never a dull moment here. There's always something going on. Me, dad, the family, and, we have one full-time staff and, we rely on some seasonal help or, someone who can give us 2-3 days a week during the busy times.
What is it that you really like doing on the farm right now? Like, you've got all these different jobs. You can be selling, you can be spraying, you can be sorting seed. What do you like to do?
Let's think about that. I have this fantastic sprayer that some guy sold me a few years ago. Don't know what he's doing these days. I hear he's doing a podcast, I guess. But
this is the first equipment salesman I've ever heard spoke of highly in the agriculture community directly from a farmer. This is unprecedented. We got to get this on the internet.
Yeah, I don't know. I think his name was like Dan or something.
Guy with the German name, strong like boar.
And his shoes were just so, like, he must have just dumped a liter of oil on them. I'm thinking when I was like, they were so shiny, those salesman shoes.
Part of the tricks of the trade. Hey, will you shiny John Deere? I'm not going to break your shoes, man. That's awesome. So I'm still using that. That's cool.
Yeah, no, we actually, one of the big things we did on our farm this year was we retrofitted that with no free ads, JD Link. So it's really good for record keeping. So any application that we do with the sprayer, it sends it to the cloud and then they have their platform and it, gives you exact gallons applied, the speed, size of the fields, and it's all like on your dashboard and stuff. So it's really good for us to see, like, if we're, experimenting, because we put our nitrogen down in form of 28 with a sprayer. So I mean, some spots, I had a little bit left in the tank. I'm like, I'll put down a bit more nitrogen here and we'll see how that translates. So it's cool because we can see, like, that 100-foot strip that's in the back corner that Jake think, they'll do something. Oh, we'll see come harvest time because we have yield mapping. So I enjoy doing that.
I remember when that came out in the early 2000s, I was trying to place exactly what year, but at the time, I think they had actually come out with a program for IP, which tracked, which is meant to sort of track all your production to the end user, but that was way too early on the curve. But it's good to see. I always thought this stuff had to be automated before it'd be any use.
Yeah. And I think moving forward, I think that's what our consumers demanding is they want that traceability. So I think programs like this and stuff like this moving forward, it's going to become the industry standard. I think it's going to get to the point where upon point of sale, you're going to have a record of, seeding, crop protection applications, fertilizing, like it's going to be a requirement, I think. And I don't know, I can't put a timestamp on it, but I think I'll definitely see it in my lifetime for sure.
Consumers are demanding.
I think they want to know who's behind their food. I think it's the conversation's changed now from, I want food to what's the story behind my food. There's a quote somewhere that they want to feel good about their food. They want to know where it comes from and who produced it. And I think that's, we're seeing that more and more, especially in egg. So
love it. Okay. Well, that kind of wraps up the prodigal son section. So we're about a third of the way through here. You're doing great. Now let's circle back to your last year of U of M, where you're just ripping it up with everybody that was there to learn. And you got into a debate about the carbon tax, which is obviously a heated topic for everybody in Western Canada, especially agriculture. And it kind of helped launch your career into politics now where you're representing farmers. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So back when I was still in school, Keystone Ag Producers, who's our farm lobby group in Manitoba, came to our classroom and they kind of gave us this spiel of who they were, what they did, who they represented, that kind of stuff. And they talked about their policy work and what they do, and, you know, meeting with governments and advocacy, policy, that kind of stuff. They invited us to their annual meeting, which had kind of been going on with the diploma program for a few years, invited us to their annual meeting and said, bring a resolution with you guys. Like, you know, and so we kind of like, resolution, like what's, and so they went and worked through us and they kind of said, okay, like, what are some policy issues or what are some things going on, you know, say directly off your farm that affect your farm? That's how they kind of explained it. So, you know, it's not the fact that you know, the back 40, it's got a few ruts from that night when dad went out there in the pickup truck, is a little wet and yeah, there seems to be a little bit of standing water there. And, you know, ever since that night, field hasn't been right. Like, it's not something like that. It's in the sense of, you know, like a government policy or something like that. So at the time, this was when the carbon tax was just coming out, where it was like, boom, everyone was talking about it in agriculture. So this is what something our class came up with and drafted a resolution. And the gist of it basically was that, you know, moving forward, we've identified issues like public trust. People want to know about their food. We want to be part of that conversation. We feel that, you know, we want to work with governments and industry on this issue. We don't want to, you know, be seen as being stubborn. We want to be progressive. We want to be ahead of the curve. And isn't it better to be at that table discussing rather than, you know, standing one way or another and refusing? So that was the gist of it. So we drafted that. I got voluntold to speak to it.
Popular guy.
Which back to, I know I bring up gingers a lot, but like I said, it was three gingers who got voluntold to speak to this. Which, what are the odds? Must have just not liked us.
Natural selection that you're outspoken, or did you become outspoken because you're always, you know, being singled out as a ginger? Like, how does that work?
I think it's the Scottish blood, whatever's left of that running through my veins. That, you know, the brave heart running through the hills, Scotland. It's that.
Wow. You really
the action that's
you see yourself as Mel Gibson, like in your mind, running over the hills in a kilt.
I was going to say, in that movie, I don't know if I'd say Mel Gibson now. He's been getting quite a bit of bad press. So, so presented, we went to the annual meeting and we had a district support. So they moved it. So it was governance. It was procedural. And we prepared, we spoke, and there was obviously quite a bit of debate. And that was interesting to see because I'd never seen that before. In regards to policy or ag policy, I'd never seen a debate going back and forth, and it went on for quite some time. And we gave our initial piece and we were kind of sitting there because it was our first experience. And we were sitting there thinking like, you know, are we allowed to speak again? Like what's the, I remember I looked over at our dean and she went, yeah, get up there guys. Like this is you, this is your piece, right? Like, yeah. You know, it's better to take your thoughts, express them rather than sit there and think, oh, I would have, could have, should have, right? So we were about to get up and then someone got up and in their speech, they said, you know, I'm doing this for the young people, and pointed at us. And it was a complete opposite, like lost the point, nothing to do with what we'd said. And we're like, that's putting words in our mouth. So we you know, we got up and we rebutted and whatnot. And in the end, the policy passed. So that was a really cool experience to be a part of. And that's what got me interested in ag policy and ag politics, was being a part of that process. I said to you before, like, my parents always encouraged me. They said, be the change that you want to see. Like, if you've got an opinion, if you've got something you want to do, do it. Because, you know, especially when it comes to policy and whatnot, if you don't say something, you know, 10, 15, 20 years down the line, when that policy becomes law, when it's legislated, you know, you've lost your opportunity, you've lost your window. So I've kind of always had that mindset. And then I kind of went and worked around for a bit, still kind of kept in touch with the group. And eventually I came back. I was on our district board. Then I sat on the board of directors representing our district. And then just this past February, I was elected to vice president. And I co-chair our Manitoba Young Farmer Program.
Well, I want to circle back to speaking out. That's an important point. And I'm sure there's lots of people listening that are thinking, like, maybe they have something they want to speak out about, you know, because everybody feels passionate about topics. Is that something that you really had to work at? Or you're kind of a natural at and you're just getting better at? Or what would you just say to somebody who wants to speak out but finds it difficult?
I would say plan out what you're going to say. Do your research first. Like, educate yourself. Like, I'm always challenging myself to learn about a subject I don't understand or further my knowledge. So I'm reading, you know, trying to expand my horizons. And I like to read, try and find both sides before I myself form my opinion on something. But I would say read, plan out what you're going to say. I would say one of the biggest mistakes people make, if it's in a medium where you're speaking, find what works best for you. Some people, like when they're speaking, I know for me, I hate reading word for word. Like, if I'm going to say something, I can't go to that piece of paper. When I speak, I jot the main points down and I kind of go from there. But I guess the big thing is, get involved, whether it's with a farm group, whether it's 4-H, whether it's your town council, whatever the medium is, just get yourself involved. Try something new, push yourself. If you go into those environments, you're going to get an opportunity one way or another, right? So I say that's the first step, is to get involved, because you never know what opportunities are going to arise.
Well, hey, that'd be awesome if somebody heard this and wanted to take up arms about something that they were passionate about to make a difference in the world, and good on you. It takes courage and talent to do that. So, and that's what happens. Literally, that situation you were illustrating is, if you're not going to get up and speak, somebody's going to speak for you that may not represent your views at all. So congratulations on that. So moving to the third part, we were joking about Keystone agricultural producers sort of being like the Hunger Games with 12 districts, and you're in District 1, a lot like Katniss, just, you know, different sex and various other differences, which I didn't, probably not pertinent to the conversation to illustrate today. And I've got Trumping Trudeau in there because this is about politics. But tell us about the Keystone agricultural producers, your role there, and what you guys are working on. And you were just making a speech at the House of Commons, and you're really using your voice for some good with this in this organization. Let's hear about that.
Yeah, so Keystone Ag Producers is one of the, if not the largest, producer, you know, policy lobby group in Manitoba. So they represent a variety of different farmers in Manitoba. So it's grain farmers, it's like sheep producers, we have like vegetable growers, fruit, like there's a whole big list. We are a producer funded and producer oriented and producer directed organization. So whatever policy producers come forward with, and, you know, once it's debated and passed, goes to the organization and it kind of goes from there.
Take me inside that board meeting that you guys have every couple of months. What does that look like to attend one, and what kind of discussions do you have there?
Well, I mean, definitely scary for me, my first one. It's like I'm a young guy. There's no hiding that. And just the quality of people in the organization, it just astounds me. Like, we've got people who have been leaders in their field, they've been national leaders, and they all care. Like, they're there to truly help our industry. They're encouraging. They've been great to me, really encouraging of young people. They want more youth involvement. It's interesting to go there, and the quality of discussions, like it's, you know, pertinent issues and, you know, all your standard governance stuff and approving and yes, no, hand up, down, that kind of stuff. But it's great to go there and the discussions and the work that they do. And I'm excited to work and continue to work with the organization. I think it's a great group, and they really do have the best interests of Manitoba farmers and agriculture at heart.
So what are some of the things that you're most proud of having worked with them or the organization has done? And like, what are you guys working on now?
So one of the kind of cool things is Manitoba. I don't know why Manitoba, because it's awesome, right, Dan? Manitoba is awesome.
Number one, except when I'm in Saskatchewan, then Saskatchewan's number one. No, I love them both. It's cool. I love them both.
Manitoba actually has the highest percentage of young farmers. So yeah, young really? Farmers defined by Stats Canada is farmer under the age of 40.
That's interesting.
So they're kind of, so they're seeing this resurgence of young farmers, in Manitoba. And, kind of one of the things I noticed is we have subcommittees that deal with, you know, meet on different issues. So like grains, oilseeds, pulses, transportation committee, livestock committee, environment committee, taxation committee, probably going to miss a couple. So I'm just going to go with those five. and then in 2019, we formed a young farmer committee. Our young farmer policy committee got the opportunity to meet with federal minister Bibeau. So the federal ag minister. So we got, I can't remember how long the meeting with her, but that was an awesome experience to be a part of that group. And then to have that group go and do something, to meet with the federal ag minister in our country. And we received lots of positive feedback on that. So that's probably been two of the most cool things I've been a part of so far.
That is awesome. I was just thinking as you're talking, your acceleration in your life, in your career, just by virtue of hanging out with all these people, being surrounded by, you know, that kind of mentality is a really good opportunity. And I guess that would be a pretty good opportunity for anybody that wants to be a part of a board on almost any level. You know, it's great to be surrounded by really passionate people that are intelligent leaders and caring and everything. Speaking of rural internet, I don't know if that was the cause of it, but you were recently trying to connect with, you should have been talking about rural internet access because.
Yeah. So I was asked to, present to the House of Commons Standing Committee on Ag, I don't get nervous for a lot of things. I was pretty nervous for that. I'm like, this is the show, man. I'm Ballantyne's place on game 7 of Stanley Cup final here. Like, I can hear the Winnipeg Whiteout is just so I'm gonna go into this it's virtual committee because obviously they're not sitting. And I'd written a submission and I was going to speak it because, I mean, you have to, if you're speaking, you have to submit for translation reasons, right? So I'd composed a document. So they were doing a study on business risk management. So like insurance, so agri-insurance, agri-invest, agri-stability, agri-recovery, and agri-risk initiatives. So those are the five business management programs offered in Canada. So speaking on that, as a young person, it's like 5 minutes before I'm supposed to be on the call and my internet is still down. And I'm like, just losing it. I'm like, come on, this has to happen when I'm supposed to be. So my phone rings, you know, no caller ID. I'm like, okay, this is someone from the government. Answer. They're like, is this Mr. Ayer? I'm like, yeah. Are you aware that you're supposed to be in a committee meeting right now? I'm like, yeah, just like holding it. I'm like, my internet's crashed and I'm kind of panicking. So I'm trying to get this together. And then the lady's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm like, yeah. She's like, do you want a tech to call you? I'm like, sure. So the tech calls me and he's just like, hi, Mr. Air. I'm like, yeah. He's like, so you're having internet problems. I'm like, oh, I'm like, I'm having internet problems 100%. And he laughs and he's like, I'm like, yeah, I've reset my router. I'm like, I'm literally just waiting for it to reboot. Boots, he lets me in the meeting.
I feel
and,
for you.
And so you're like, oh, so all this roller coaster, I haven't even gotten into the meeting yet, Dan. So I get into the meeting. I had my attire on. I got a dashing sport coat and collared shirt on. So someone else, two individuals speak. And then, okay, Mr. Chair says, Mr. Air, you're speaking. So time starts now. So you have 7 minutes. It's okay. I'm like, hello, start doing my thing. All of a sudden, so I'm wearing these headphones. And I hear my headphones, this quiet voice, like, Mr. Air. Mr. Air, stop speaking. And I'm like, so I stop. So a lot of the meeting, like it was in French and, I can understand a bit enough to get by. And I knew that they're saying stop. So I stopped and then their interaction. And then they say, the translators can't hear what you're saying and they're finding it hard because they're watching my mouth, right? They're finding it hard to translate and they need you to adjust your microphone. And then, Mr. Air, your video's quit. Oh, Mr. Air, we can't. And I'm like, internet crashed again.
No way.
Again. So it stopped. And then I rebooted it. And in the end, I tethered off my phone to get the connection. So I tethered it. And then I got that up. And then they said, Mr. Air, you have 3 minutes. So my time got caught and I lost my place and I'm like, and I put all this effort in, but it went in as a written submission. But it was just kind of, it was frustrating. I was like, man, I came here to talk about business risk management. And I got one question, from the NDP ag critic. And he said, he's like, oh, I felt bad for you. He said, you were prepared and all this. And he said, that's not your fault, by the way. I'm like, okay, good. And then he asked me a question and I said, yeah, I said, well, I was trying to elaborate that in my presentation, but internet kind of, and then they all laughed. I'm like, yeah, I should have been talking about rural internet. I should go to that committee. So,
well, that very event just speaks volumes about, you know, the nature of reality when it comes to our connection with the East, and it's unfortunate, but at least you're stepping up and having some conversations. So tell us, like, what were you sharing with the committee there, the House of Commons, and what were you hoping to achieve? I read your speech. It was awesome, by the way. And it's just such a shame that, you know, didn't get the opportunity to articulate, like, in normal circumstances, I guess you would have physically been there in your suit and tie and you could have seen what a nice young gentleman you are. And you could have talked about your family history in a passionate way, looked them in the eye, like kind of like if you want to convince a jury or something. And unfortunately we're all in this COVID situation, but you did the best you could. So what were you trying to achieve there?
Yeah. So, I mean, you're looking for input on business risk management. And so I had a couple points, like AgriInvest was one, like it used to be, the portion was 3%, like the, eligibility. So I'd said like 3%, that's something I could agree with. And then basically I told the story of like 2019, the harvest from hell, which for many producers across Canadian prairies, when I say harvest from hell, they know exactly what I mean. And I talked about how on our farm, we had all these accrued costs. So like drying our grain, putting on aeration fans. We put tracks on our combine. Like we rented tracks, put them on our combine. We rented another combine to finish. So we harvest with a neighbor farm about the same size. And we share, like, you know, labor resources just so it's efficient for both of us. We get harvest done as quick as possible. So we rented this combine. So we did dry grain, aeration fans, tough grain, crop that got left out in the field, you know, using a propane torch to defrost our combine header. Like, basically, I talked about all these points and how it added up to be, you know, Dad and I did some preliminary cost estimates. And here's the thing though, Dan, like, and you'll know, farmers are good people for the most part. Everyone I've met has been a great individual. And that mighty neighborly expression, everyone helped out everyone last year and, you know, kind of said, oh, don't worry about it. Or we'll sit down and square up later. That kind of, you know, that kind of mentality, which is still very true in agriculture. So there's a lot of trades of things and that kind of stuff. Or, oh, we'll sit down later, figure it out. Well, To no avail. We have not sat down later and figured it out yet. So like some of these costs are, you know, still hasn't been figured out, and we gotta do that. But like I said, my point was we spent probably close to, if not, it's gonna be more now, like 90 grand on just between the rentals, machinery, repairs, like basically costs, additional costs to take off this harvest from hell. And my point was, if agri-stability and agri-recovery do not account for these costs, there needs to be some serious revisions and changes. Because in my mind, you know, that weather event and the wet weather and then that snow, that 2.5 feet of snow that we had, caused a lot of costs and stress to people. And if our programming can't account for those costs, I'm like, well, it needs to be a revision. Like I said, I'm not asking for a government handout. I just want to be able to better guarantee, you know, insure. If I have to pay more for more insurance, I am happy. I just want to be able to guarantee my insurance level. So that's all my kind of, my main piece was that, you know, we had all these events happening and these programs are supposed to be a backstop for when circumstances beyond our control happen. And in my mind, they didn't. So that was my point.
What's wrong with the insurance right now?
Okay. Well, a couple of points. Agri-stability is very complex. Like, I don't know everything. I don't claim to know everything. I struggle to wrap my head around it and like the reading it. And we've been to meetings with our accountants and even they're kind of like, well, this says that, but this says this. And so maybe
and it's $400 like, an hour for them to figure that out.
Yeah. So the complexity, and that was my other comment, was this program needs to be, you know, simple, easier to understand. Cause that's when you talk to people, those are the two things that come up. It's complex. I don't understand it. And it doesn't work for operations. Like I hear all the time, people who have, say, you know, grain farm and livestock, they're like, it doesn't work for me. It has never paid out. So why would I enroll in it? So I think the uptake isn't quite what it should be. So I see that as a problem. If you have a government program that's supposed to be the answer and people are like, yeah, no, that's the problem there. Right. So it's complex. You know, costs are changing in agriculture. Nothing is cheap anymore. I mean, I'd love a new, John Deere X9 combine. If someone wants to, you know,
are you out there?
But, yeah, like costs have risen. Like it's no longer, you know, you hear stories of, farmers, you know, they took off a half section of flax in, I don't know, 1962. I just tried to put a year on it and no, but I've heard stories like, oh, I took off that half section of flax and with the profit on that half section, I bought the combine that ran that. I'm like, oh, that would be slick. But the cost of everything now, and the margins are tight. Ever since Dan left, machinery prices have just skyrocketed.
Yeah, I saw the writing on the wall. It almost made me look smart, but it was probably not that plan. But yeah, now if you take off a crop, I mean, you can be proud if you make the payment. You don't go buy something. You're just like, oh, I made my lease payment. We're in the game.
Yeah, it's at the point now, everyone is leveraged, right? Like, you know, leveraged by their assets. It's kind of, it's not a realistic picture. It's like everyone is, you know, credit and going to the bank and loans and, you know, I feel like the climate has changed. So it's a different game. And the cost, like my whole bottom line is just, if I have to pay more for more insurance, I'm happy. I just want to be able to get more insurance. That's my point.
Well, that's a good one. I think there could be good tools out there. And if they were simple and usable, then you could take some of the risk out of it for sure. So this is awesome, man. We covered a lot of ground. We could talk a lot longer and maybe you could come on again, you know, as you've covered some more political ground and had some more experiences. I think it's a really good conversation. You know, wrapping things up here, what's next for you in terms of agriculture, the farm and working with Keystone Agricultural Producers and all that? What are your goals? What are you focused on?
Yeah. So I guess the farm, think, cause it's been hot lately. It's looking like we're probably going to be putting on fungicide here on the weekend on our barley.
Yeah.
And then as far as Keystone, we have our, advisory council. So that's a summer policy session. We're just kind of working on finalizing the date, looking like end of July. So that's going to be on Zoom, because obviously we're still under guidelines and restrictions for amount of people in a room, that kind of thing. So there's that. So that's our policy session. And as well, I forgot to tell you about this in my pre-interview, but here's my plug. I'm also this year, I got the opportunity, and it's a charity that I really, you know, believe in, and it's important to rural Canada, is Stars Air Ambulance.
Nice. Love it.
So they, their big fundraising event is called Rescue on the Island. So I got the opportunity. I am going to be on the island, so I have to fundraise some money to get off the island. So, hopefully there's enough people out there that maybe, I don't know, they don't have to like me, they just have to like Stars. They would maybe possibly be able to donate. I know this is a service, like in my life, we haven't had to utilize it, but in agriculture, I'm sure you know, Dan, you talk to anyone or you hear that word Stars, everyone knows what you mean, right? Like they know about the air ambulance, they know, have a family member, they've heard a story about how it's, you know, truly benefited them. So I'm doing that charity event. Perhaps I can give you a link or something. There's a page where if people are able to donate, that's something I'm pretty excited about. So that's September 9th is that event.
Please do. And I'm sure that a lot of people will be coughing up some cash to save a ginger, you know, given their relative rarity and the fact that they're going extinct. I mean, we can't afford to lose many more gingers. I mean, you gotta get out there and you gotta proliferate, young man. You can't hold those genes back. You gotta get procreating here.
You say that like that, Dan, but I'm worried people, you're saying that people are gonna they can get rid of that guy. He can stay there.
He hasn't even had children yet. I mean, we're gonna bring this guy back. I mean, we were gonna have a segment on farm dating, and I don't know if that has anything to do with internet connectivity, but I mean,
That's a whole nother, we can do a whole nother podcast on that one, Dan. It's a little different in the farm world than downtown Toronto.
Do you have any stories about when you were like swiping right on potentially like a life mate and then your internet died?
Internet died, yeah, mid texting of conversation and it just gone. Yeah, I'm sure it was the internet and not the fact that this lady looked and saw the picture of a ginger and went, no. It wasn't the fact that it was an accident. It was, I'm saying it was the internet, 100%. It was, her internet just crashed. So
I feel you, brother.
That's why
I feel you, brother. Every time I get ghosted, it's the internet.
Yeah, it's internet. Oh, yeah, her internet just must have been out for the past week. She just hasn't been able to talk. I'll send her a telegram.
Oh, another one loses connection. Damn, I thought we had such a great connection, and she lost her connection.
Oh, that's great, Dad.
We had a lot of fun at last Manitoba Ag Days. We're going to have a lot of fun at the next one, even if like we're socially distanced. I'm hoping it'll still happen, but we'll see. But
yeah, I really hope. I mean, I guess you guys will be the same, right? With depending on guidelines and what the plan is moving forward. But I really hope something happens with Ag Days. It's a fun time, great learning opportunity, and great networking opportunity to get to meet a lot of people from all over the world.
But I think your voice is going to ring through the halls of the decision makers in the years to come. And you're on a great path to be surrounded by such good people. So keep up the good work. I appreciate you coming on the show. Say hi to your dad for me. And I guess one last thing, you said per capita, we got the most young farmers. Did you know that we got the most, we also in Manitoba have the most cottages per capita in the world?
No. I mean, we got a lot of beautiful lakes. That's a lot that I haven't even been to, because I know there's some up north that.
Yeah. You guys are out at the Lake of the Prairies, hey?
Yeah. Lake of the Prairies, Assisippi. That's kind of been the winter stomping ground when we were kids growing up, flying down the ski hill. And of course we met up with your brother and his wife a couple of times, and it's great. I love it up there. It's a great place. I still actually, when I'm not doing 10 million other things, I bartend a bit there in the winter too. It's just kind of
really
some fun and something to do. And you know, come Christmas time where, you know, I got a house full of family and maybe you need an escape.
Maybe.
I didn't say that. The bar is a good place to work.
Well, let's have a shot this winter if I don't see you before then.
Sure.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it. Take care, Jake. Keep it real.
Thanks for listening to the Growing the Future podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook for highlights of the show. Also, full-length videos of the show are available on our website, www.growingthefuturepodcast.ca, and on YouTube. We would very much appreciate if you took the time to visit our sponsor, Eberhard Ag Solutions, at eberhardagsolutions.ca, where you can find innovative solutions that transform your farm.